Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Zeke, and it's 2:06. I'm here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina, and we are, the co-hosts of Movement Museum, which you're listening to on CKUT 90.3 FM on your radio dial, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer dial. You can find us on iTunes, Twitter, Facebook, all over the place, although we're changing those things around as well. How are you guys doing?
Good. It's sunny out.
Yes, it's very nice finally.
Yeah. No more snow.
Are you certain about that?
Yes.
Don't jinx it.
For a cup of coffee, I bet you.
I only bet nickels.
I'm too nervous to put my winter coat away, just in case.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it out a couple of weeks. I have way too many pieces of paper around me and stuff like that. So in an endeavor to get rid of some of that paper, I have a poem called The Dance by William Carlos Williams, who when I was, I think, 18 or 19 or so, he was my favorite poem. my favorite poet. The dance. In Bruegel's great picture, the Kermesse, the dancers go round, they go round and around. The squeal and the blare and the tweedle of bagpipes, a bugle, fiddles, tipping their bellies round as the thick-sided glasses whose wash they impound. Their hips and their bellies off balance to turn them, kicking and rolling about the fairgrounds, swinging their butts, those shanks must be sound to bear up under such rollicking measures, prance as they dance in Bruegel's great picture, the Kermesse.
Great visual arts and dance. I like
it. Yeah, it's, yeah, we can get something out of the order. This is from a wonderful, wonderful book that I found at the Vincent Warren Library up on... the École Nationale Supérieure de Ballet, I think is how they put it. They put it out in French.
I think there's a Contemporain in there.
Yeah, okay.
But and, that's pretty much it.
Yeah, and it's, on Rivard, in just below St. Joseph, and they're having a book sale all this weekend as part of, if we can combine everything, as part of the Pas de Danse, Pas de Vie stuff, which Regroupement Québécois de la Danse has organized. And yeah, they're having a book sale. Every single book is $2.
Or five.
No?
I bought one that was $5. Oh. But it was a big picture book of all the recent dance ballets in companies in Canada, although recent for 1977. But it makes for a nice coffee table book. I'm really excited about it.
How did I miss that one? I was specifically looking for historical stuff.
Allison got there first. Yeah.
No, I didn't. I got there second. Mm. But I just spent a good hour looking through all the books.
I went through all the magazines.
Oh, no, skip the magazines.
There I figured on, as I was telling Bettina last night, was realizing, oh, yeah, it's for his fundraising stuff, because they have these covers of people from the 80s. Suddenly realized, oh, yeah, we have people coming in who were dancing in the 80s, and so all we have to do is get a pen, get them autographed, and suddenly, that 50-cent magazine becomes something you can want to frame and put on your wall.
There is
always
something
thinking.
I got from the book sale I'm really excited about. It was a picture book of the Rockets, which I thought it was really cute that their library even had it. That the performance troupe that performs out of Radio City Music Hall in Manhattan, New York, and it's them in their cute little costumes.
You know let me spit this out. I've read that it is extremely difficult and very, very hard to be a Rockette.
I can believe it.
Getting your leg up there all the
time.
Yeah,
that's their signature move, is like knee to ear.
In clockwork unison.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool, so then we're out of order. So yes, we can talk. So what else did you get?
I got a couple biographies. I think one was Rudolph Laban and the other was Isadora Duncan. But I tried to stop myself there. My pile kept getting bigger and I was like, Allison, you can't carry all that home.
I brought a knapsack.
Yeah.
I scored two books of poetry and dance poetry. And then, yeah, I got a book on Laban as well. Yours has got the pink cover?
No, mine is, it's just his musings.
Okay.
About life. It doesn't have anything about his theories in it. It's just about kind of Laban the man.
Okay. And then, I picked up as much as I could that would be back. Give me background in history on dance here in Quebec, because I realized, especially since today's Dance Day, International Dance Day, and we have in Quebec a whole dance week.
Ah, happy International Dance Day, then.
Yes. Have you made it to the library yet?
No, not yet. Okay. That's still on my agenda.
I think you have two more days.
Okay.
I believe May 1st is the last day of the book sale. Mm-hmm.
Right. And it is the sort of thing where they do this apparently every year, and there were a lot of books from this year which were from last year. I was under the impression that they were all $2, because that's what the woman who was a librarian told me. All the books, $2.
I splurged on a $5 one.
Okay.
Broke the piggy bank.
Okay. I spent $20 there.
Wow. I hope there's anything left by the time I get there.
I think so, yes.
What else did you get?
It's a tough question, because I was carrying them around and realizing I got to leave them off at my apartment, and given that I'm house-sitting now, I haven't seen them in 2 days, but it was, some histories of ballet, sort of general backgrounds from building up on International Dance Day, so that whereas prior to doing research for today's show, I had no idea who Jean-Georges Nevers is. I now have probably two books that explain who he is, why he is, and everything else that goes on up until about 1900 or so. Then, there are a bunch of I got a magazine, some sort of Canadian ballet magazine that has, who's the blonde woman with the dreads?
Louisa Cavalier.
Thank you. That has her on the cover in mid air, horizontal, with Edward Locke hanging out in the background. Then I found, there's some other ballet dancer who's a name I didn't recognize at all, but there I actually know the guy who took the photograph, which is a friend of mine, Ron Diamond. So I'm going to have to go back and talk to him about getting some of his pictures and stuff like that so that we can have lots and lots of fun. But yeah, I basically focused on a lot of historical stuff, figuring that if I'm behind the microphone and I got to talk like I'm knowledgeable about dance, then I probably should try and become knowledgeable about dance.
That was my thought as well.
But didn't you take like a, which one, the history?
Dance history? Yeah. Yeah, okay. But there's so much to cover. you can't stop looking because you're not going to ever learn it all.
That I agree, although, yes, that I agree, and I can then just be diplomatic and keep my mouth shut. That has more to do with the person or people's teaching the course and the syllabus and the textbooks, as opposed to anything. Because I figure if I'm going to be learning something, then at which point I'm going to take a class on it, then they probably should be focusing in the idea of that I have to then go and do other outside research to fill in the holes, which is sort of the impression I'm getting from how you said it. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's there, the idea of doing outside research for stuff that should be in the syllabus. I'm saying,
well, yes and no, but it's like a 6-credit, full year course. And what can you learn in a year reasonably about the history of dance? Okay. Yes, but there's still so much left to learn.
I just, as I said, I think I have to learn how to be just slightly more diplomatic.
Smiles all around.
Okay. So we're going to continue on about international dance there. Do we want to get into Otra Aurilla or Cockpit or something like that?
I got my Otra Aurilla notes out.
Okay. Yeah, me too.
Talk about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go wild. Start us all off, please.
Oh, okay. Well, after Bettina's incredible reaction to it when we had them into the studio, I had very high expectations for the show. And it was nice. It was comfortable. But I'm not sure I was as head over heels for it. Should we set it up maybe first? There's video projections. She has her band on stage with her.
Yeah, there. I even have it written down. The band is Hedy El Moro Agraha, which I'm mispronouncing his name. He's the singer. The composer and first guitarist is Caroline Plant. There's Craig Adams, who's also playing guitar, and Eric Breton, who's the percussionist. The video is by Jean-Vier Vallard.
Cool. I will agree with you, Bettina, that the vocalist was incredible. He blew me away.
Awesome.
We had a little fight about this afterwards.
No.
Really? You didn't like him?
It's that whole sort of Gypsy King style of singing and sort of the whining and sort of...
But that is flamenco. You can say, I don't like pointillism because there are too many dots. that's what it is.
And I don't like pointillism. But yeah, no, I found him very, very grating, and I can understand it's a concept that sort of plays on the emotions and plays the emotions, but yeah, it just drove me, that whining just made the hair on the back of my neck stand up.
I couldn't get enough of it. I thought it was great.
Oh, yeah.
I think it has to do something with the fact that you guys are Y chromosome challenged.
Perhaps.
Oh, please. Well, it got a reaction out of all of us. Yes. I'll say that much.
Whether good or bad. On the musician note, I found with this whole concept of integrating them was really nice. I felt like at some points she was just integrating them or moving them around the stage, or they would do something that I didn't feel was relevant or I didn't feel was necessary. And I felt like it was just to keep things moving along in case what she was doing was, she needed a break or it wasn't as engaging. So, hey, let's have a position change for the band. We'll have them move over here. We'll have them go behind a screen. We'll play with some lights on them or something like that.
Have them march around.
Yeah, and it was just kind of useless.
Yes.
You didn't feel that served to distinguish between different scenes and setups?
No, not really.
Not to my mind. It's the transitions were when pretty much everybody was off stage. And there were a couple of times when that happened, and it was the video that was being used as the transition, and there I found that, yes, they were sort of in there, but they didn't need to be there. Could have just, I personally prefer it when somebody's dancing to a live band. However, it's a sort of thing that, yeah, having a live marching band didn't add anything to it, and a live marching flamenco band just doesn't really cut it for me.
At some moments, their spacing was relevant to what she was doing, and those were nice, you know, especially at the end when they created kind of a little semicircle at the back and she was really interacting with them and they were kind of egging her on. That was great, and that made sense to me. But, you know, moving from stage left to stage right and continuing to play, it just didn't do anything for me.
No, the line that I have about the whole thing, to take sort of an overview, is sort of in the middle of it, where I wrote down and I said, wow, that sounds brilliant. And now I'm looking at it in the brightness of dancing. Oh, it's not that brilliant, but it still gets everything. Where it seemed to me that the show was, it seems to be a series of unconnected moves designed to end in dramatic poses without any tension. Ooh. And it is the sort of thing where, yes, there were dramatic poses. The dresses were really, really, for the most part, the costumes were spectacular.
Yeah. Very, very nice.
But it's the sort of thing where my understanding of flamenco is that there's supposed to be a certain tension, sort of, is the guy going to get the girl? Is the girl going to get the guy? Who's showing off most, highest, fastest, mostest? And it really, to me, lacked any sort of tension. There were a couple of times where she went off and was going, showing off at how well she dances, but it really did not sort of have any cohesive whole to me.
I think that's because it's not pure flamenco. It's like a flamenco fusion. You don't get the, she didn't have as much energy as you would get from a traditional flamenco, which is really one of those high octane ones where, you know, the flamenco dancer just builds up a sweat. She did a lot of halting movements, and then she would, yes, like strike a pose. But also, she's there by herself, so is the girl and the guy going to get the together? Doesn't really come up, right?
You can do all sorts of stuff by yourself.
Yes, I know that.
On the note of style, though, the flamenco was impressive and it was fun. And I haven't seen a lot of flamenco, and that was refreshing. It was nice. And, you know, the stomping, and she's very strong and she's got these beautiful lines. But when she goes into this kind of opposition, when she tries to do the fluidity and become softer, like especially in the white dress, you know, and everything's smoother and it's kind of more of a daze, less about strict clock time, I felt like she couldn't quite get there. She still had these lines and this strength and this hold in her, that the fluidity and balance wasn't quite there.
I must say, the one with the waves and the white dress, it was the slowest piece, and it was also my least favorite piece. That felt when she was sort of running a little low on juice. And my favorite piece was the last one, where she really let it rip. It was full of energy and passion. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that you imagine flamenco to be when you sit down in the room.
So I appreciate the idea of doing a fusion, but really the strength of the show was the flamenco, not her reaching out to connect it to anything else.
Yeah, no, I like the hopscotch part as well.
Oh yeah, that was cool. We had a lot of creative ideas in there. Yeah.
But I agree. It's I had something, but never mind. I seem to be always losing.
Something you mentioned, Zeke, about cohesion. Mm-hmm. I felt like there was a fair amount of cohesion thematically. And actually my only complaint, and this might be biased because we had her in and we had her explain to us kind of what her themes were, but it seemed like a little bit she was hitting us over the head with her ideas. And with the projection of the clock parts, and when you're doing a piece about time and you start using your arms, like the hands on a clock, I just think of like the big comfy couch and the 10-second cleanup. It's just too baseline. It's just too simple and too easy.
Although, why did that video start at 30 then? That was the thing that confused me. You could have just made the sort of circle hands going around slower and just added a 12. I'm not so certain. I understand that she did have a theme going through it. I caught bits and pieces of it, but it was not hitting me over the head at all.
But it was all about time, right? It was all about
counting. About the beat, that compass that is very specific to flamenco.
But I think it was just about time. Like in the little recordings, the voice recordings halfway through, you know, they're talking about waiting, they're talking about time and stuff like that. Like it kind of went away from the 12 count, and
Yeah, it went away, but it's more the concept of time, like waves can mm-hmm. count time, you know, and then they talk about the seventh wave, which is then the biggest. And hopscotching also, it's about order and, you know, you're fitting your...
Right.
It's like a dance move that is very constrained.
But then both of those move away from the 12 count.
Yeah.
Base.
Yeah, they call it El Doce, but I didn't feel that was so much about that. I think that for her was a starting point.
Mm-hmm.
Like the clock, and then you have the 12 there, and then she sort of started riffing off.
Yeah, I'm with Bettina on that one.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, the two other things, the one thing that I sort of lost my point because my paper was disappearing from me, is that it also, there were... But the two really, really expensive instruments that were out there, which was sort of like the sort of gong setup, and then the thing that was sort of circled around going whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. And to me, that just added to the whole thing of it just not being connected and cohesive, because we're given that, yeah, there is probably a fair bit of government funding involved in it. If you can then say, we need these instruments for this piece, let's get them on stage and so on. But they were there, and then they disappeared, and there was no real... to my mind, reason for having them is just, yeah, okay.
Yeah, but that, when flamenco happens really spontaneously, in the original style, mm-hmm. it's just a bunch of guys or people who come together mm-hmm. in a cafe, and somebody brings a guitar and somebody drums on the chair.
It's similar to the dance, that was the woman with the calves of a dancer that we had here.
The woman with the what?
Le milieu de danseuse.
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh. And the dance mm-hmm. she had, where it was that folk dance, very similar to that. It's just, this is what we do. Yes, mm-hmm. I understand that entirely.
Yeah, mm-hmm. So then you will always have instruments appearing and disappearing because it's that spontaneous nature.
That's fine. But when the instruments are sort of a thing of like gongs that get banged twice, and then you have this other instrument that just goes around. It's sort of like, for those of you on the radio who can't see what I'm doing with my hand, I'm doing like a hooping movement, right?
Yes, you are.
I'm sort of doing a hooping movement with my hand without a hoop, because there I'd then have some sort of object that goes woo, 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 woo. And it was there and then it wasn't. Those aren't really instruments that you just have hanging around, lying at your disposal.
Doesn't matter.
The guitar is something you have lying at your disposal. The boxes where he can beat on it and stuff like that, that's fine. It was those two that sort of just jumped out.
You didn't get enough bang for your buck, is that
it? No, exactly. Or maybe I got a little bit too much bang for my buck.
I want to describe one of these costumes because they're just so incredible. Yeah,
we definitely have to give shout-outs and props to Susanna Vera.
Oh, incredible. It was every time she left the stage, it's like, what is she going to wear next? Because she had several costume changes throughout the piece.
Do you want me to list them off? I have them written down here.
Oh, okay.
Uh-huh. She started off with a black pantsuit with sheer sleeves, which was very, very dramatic because given that I'm not the Y chromosome challenge one, I really do like sheer. Sheer is good. Then she came out with the same black pants, but in a red raincoat with red shoes. Then it was a wedding gown, which was the white wedding gown.
Oh, yeah, but with this huge train.
With a huge train, yes.
It was like she was wearing the ocean.
Yes, and that was probably, to me, the most spectacular costume she had.
The reason it looks like she was wearing the ocean is because there's a projection on her and on the white screen behind her, so she just kind of moves around, mm-hmm. and this projection stays on the dress.
But I didn't like how she was forced into kicking the train. It was...
it got into her way.
Yeah, it was the sort of thing that could have been some way... Given that I'm the amazing choreographer that I am, I just could come up with thousands of ways that she could have done it much more gracefully. Then after that, she came out with a white long dress. It was in sort of without the train, because that was with the fan and the talcum powder. And then the dress got... And then she came out with a white short dress. And then we were over and done.
You missed my favorite dress.
Oh, the red fringe. That's right. Okay, sorry about that.
It's this long kind of purple-pink dress with this...
Yeah, it's a red fringe dress. Sorry, I have it there. I just missed it because there wasn't an arrow there. I'm sorry.
She had several fringes around her hips, and they kind of splayed out onto one side and kept pinched on the other, and the little white fringes on this pinky purple dress, and it just moved so nicely.
Yeah, I like how they were all flamenco inspired,
mm-hmm.
but not actual flamenco gear. Much more elegant. I would wear all of this, except maybe for the ocean dress, but everything else totally would wear.
For sure.
Okay. I'm not going to wear any of them.
Oh, come on.
Did quite like them.
The little red dress? You look very cute in that.
Next time.
Okay.
Anybody got anything else?
Nah, I still liked it.
It had its merits. Like, I didn't hate it. I enjoyed it, but I think I... Yeah. I think I've said what I've needed to say.
I must admit that I have a big, fat, soft spot for anything flamenco. So as soon as I sat down, I say, yeah, I'm going to like this.
Okay. How about we take a break, go listen to a commercial, and then come back. This is, it's 2:28. You're listening to Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3 FM, 91.7 on your cable dial, and movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. And we're back. This is Movement Museum. Just about a minute ago told you my name. No, actually, a minute ago didn't tell you. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Allison, Elizabeth, and Bettina. And we're talking about dance here in Montreal. This coming June is going to be ridiculous. I just realized when I started organizing stuff for the upcoming shows, I'm now starting to book July shows because that means that March, April, May, and June April, May, and June are already booked up because there's the FTA, the OFFTA, the Fringe Festival. There are just your regular dance things happening around, and yeah, it's just going to be insane. We may have one of those, going to try and break the record for most dancers in CKUT at one time. The record currently stands at 11. We're going to go for at least 15. But yeah, Allison, Elizabeth, what are you looking forward to at the FTA?
Oh, I have my little schedule here, and I have a series of hearts and check marks for the things that I'm most interested in seeing. The thing that caught my attention the most is Louisa Cavalier and Edward Locke in Children and A Few Minutes of Locke.
And why?
Well, do I need to explain myself? Both Edward Locke and Louisa Cavalier are just so inspiring to me. And I believe it's two pieces, one featuring Louise and one...
Now, both of them have her.
Okay.
One of them is... Hold on a second. Let me get out my handy-dandy catalog here.
Anyway, there is a preview video where you get, like, a little taste of it, and you can definitely see that athleticism and the strong technique, and it's just, like, shivers.
I don't
even care what else is on stage. I just want to see those bodies moving.
Yeah, there's... which one? One is with her and Patrick Lamotte, and the other, as far as I know, is just her. And there, the children thing is by this guy, Nigel Charnock, and A Few Minutes of Locke is her recreating some of the bits and pieces from stuff she did with Edward Locke with Patrick Lamotte, I assume, taking the place of, can I call him Ed?
You'll have to ask him.
we do have a call out asking if we can interview him. We also have a call out to her asking if we can interview her, as I'm going around telling all the dance publicists in towns, watching you melt in the presence of your heroes is something absolutely amazing and phenomenal, and I'm going to try and do it as often as I can. I hope you don't mind.
I just got to get used to it.
And Bettina, what are you looking forward to?
Oh, I like the first one on the list. The flagship for me is Nearly 90. And here, actually, the way it's printed, it looks 90 cubed, which 90 cubed is 360, right?
I think it's
nearly a circle.
Although dancers are notorious for not being able to do complicated math, so I think it's the sort of thing if it's 90 the second time around.
Okay.
Because nearly 90, my understanding is that it's already been done once.
Okay.
When he was alive, and then he just specified, because I've never met him, but the more I learn about Merce Cunningham, is the guy we're talking about, the more I think he was probably very, very anal retentive in saying, I want this to be this, and so on. The movement he was all fluid and free about, but it was a sort of thing, this is the music that's got to be playing, this is the, we got to be dancing at the same time, that you're looking at me strange.
I mean, I don't want to contradict you if I'm not entirely sure what I'm talking about. But from what I get is it's all chance and luck and in the moment and what happens.
Yeah, yes, because it's called Nearly 90.
Often the music isn't even heard before the dancers go on stage.
No, that ended, but in terms of it's just from what I've read about sort of like his will, where he said, you guys are going to do this way. And so it's, yes, chance and circumstance, but then setting up, this is the music that is going to be, this is how the music is going to play, or this is how the instruments are going to be prepared. You're limited to this set of movements and so on. And so it's, yes, within that sort of circumstance, it's sort of like, to bring back to the painting of pointillism, it's, I don't know what painting I'm going to do, but I can only use yellow and green.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to sort of get one type of style, and then a different painting could be entirely made out of purple and blue and come out much darker.
Okay, well, in any case, what they're showing is, and here it says, the final work of a major 20th century artist. And it looks really fantastic, a constant kaleidoscope of rearranging duos and trios and quartets. Yep, and, you know, I think it's an iconic choreographer, yes, and a must-see piece.
Yeah, no, there, and to continue that thought, I think it's to the power of is the sort of thing where it's just the second time because it was done before he died.
Right.
And now on their final tour around the world, because it is still the Merce Cunningham Company, but once they finish this worldwide tour, they're going the way of the dodo. It's not going to exist anymore.
So last chance to see.
Yes, and so it's the second time that nearly 90 is being played.
All righty then. How about you, Zeke? What are you looking at?
I'm surprised at myself because I sort of figured, yes, I do like both of what you guys are talking about and stuff like that. And so I obviously realized I had to take something else. And it's actually a dancer from Toronto. I'm surprised because I really don't like Toronto. Don't like anything having to do with Toronto. I'm incredibly, incredibly burn. Biased. And yes, against Toronto. But D.A. Hoskins' Portrait. For whatever reason, it struck me as being quite interesting, and I'm looking forward to it. I got my fingers crossed. I can get tickets for that, and we shall see.
What is it about this piece that intrigues you?
I think it was just the way that the video, it was sort of like very sort of, to use an overused, oft-used term that is pretty much meaningless, it seemed edgy.
Mm-hmm. Was that the one with the male and female duet, I believe?
That picture.
Okay. I always like, I don't know, the male-female duet is what gets me every time. It's so easy to do so well. So, yeah, I can see how that would be attractive.
For everybody, the Festival Transamérique is going from the 27th of May to the 12th of June. We'll be talking lots about it. We got a bunch. If you have any requests on people we should talk to at the FTA, you can email us at movement@ckut.ca. Send in your requests.
Yes, and we will hunt them down and drag them into the studio and make them talk.
You guys can do that. I will be the nice one. I will use the honeypot and say, come. It's a nice time. It's a wonderful time.
We love it.
We will serve you milk and cookies.
Okay, I bring milk and cookies.
And then, speaking of stuff that's coming up, or did you want to talk more about the FTA?
I just wanted to mention one more thing. If you're strapped for cash, here's a free one. And it also looks really exciting. Le Très Grand Continental by Sylvain Aimard. And that's June 3rd through to the 6th.
At the Place Émilie Gamelin.
And it's outdoor, and it's a whole bunch of people. I don't know how many people. 60 people? Was that the first time round?
It doesn't say here, but it says 100 amateur dancers, actually.
And it
will
just
move
gets
to the rhythm of techno, disco, waltzes, and R&B music. And you can join in, I think.
Yeah, it just gets bigger and bigger. Next year, it's going to be the extremely grand.
Right, because he did the Grand Continental last year, yeah.
And then he also, as far as free stuff, it would be a pity not to mention the big parties, as opposed to what I imagine is the unstated small parties that are going to be happening throughout. But on opening night after Nearly 90 to the Power of Two happens, there is the big party, which is happening on UQAM in their Agora, whatever it is, the Hydro-Quebec Agora thing. Then on Wednesday the 2nd, there's another party that's happening after Tout se pète la gueule chérie, or maybe after More Future. And then there is a closing party on the 12th of June. And those from previous experience are lots and lots of fun.
All right.
And so you get to, like, because there are a lot of out-of-town dancers, and they come in from out-of-town, they don't know what to do, so they then just go to the party, and then at which point, because the out-of-town dancers are there, the in-town dancers go there, and then because the in-town dancers are there, it's their friends come, and then suddenly it just gets out of control. In a good way.
Sounds promising.
But yes, there's one other thing. We're speaking of the email address and so on, we have we're special. We have a ticket giveaway. The first time ever that's happened in over a year that we've been doing this. But yes, there's minus one that's happening in the Grand Ballet Canadien, which is May 6th, 7th, and 8th. Do I have my dates right? Does anybody have it handy?
Yes. Let's just say yes. I don't know.
Hold on. Yeah. How about, can somebody pop up a browser for me while I talk away?
You talk, I will check that out.
Okay. I mentioned this show to a friend of mine. She started practically hyperventilating. So it's going to be a good one.
Yeah, no, given that I'm looking forward to seeing it as well, I'm hoping that it smokes the Killian night just so that I don't feel like I missed out.
Well, I asked her just that. I was like, well, better or worse than Jiri Killian? Because that was pretty top notch. And she said different. It's a very different style of dance.
I want to hear better. The different can be better as well.
Yeah,
or you can be better and different. But yes, there, and yeah, sorry that I'm pulling this as a surprise on you, Allison, but it's the sort of thing where the Grand Ballet Canadien have graciously offered us a pair of tickets to this show to give away to a lucky listener. And so, if you are a lucky listener and you want to be a lucky listener, you can talk louder about when it's happening.
Yeah, I don't want to interrupt you. I've got the dates now up on the website. 6, 7, and 8, and 13, 14, and 15.
So I was halfway there.
Yeah.
Okay. And it's Théâtre Maisonneuve?
Yes.
Okay. And yes, the way you can win is we'll take the third emailer. You're going to need to email us movement@ckut.ca. And all you got to say is, je veux mes billets, or I want my tickets, or does anybody know how to say it in Spanish? How would you say I want my tickets in German?
Ich hätte gerne meine Tickets.
Okay. Any other languages that we know between us?
I don't know how to say tickets in Chinese.
Okay. So it's, yes, but just let us know you want your tickets, and we will take the third emailer, and then we will hit reply and let you know how to go about getting them.
Oh, I also see here on the website there's a pre-show talk to every performance that starts at 7:30 till, starts at 7 till 7:30, and then the performance starts at 8.
Yes. Okay. Cool. It's 2:41. You're listening to Movement Museum on CKUT 90.3 FM in Montreal, 91.7 on your cable dial, movement-museum.blogspot.com on your computer. You guys want to go into cockpit? Do you want to talk about Mary Schoonard, or should we go to an ad?
Let's do an ad, and then you can do whatever you want.
Okay. We will be back after this announcement. And once again, we're back. My name is Zeke. I'm here with Bettina and Allison. Elizabeth did that in reverse alphabetic order this time. Talking about dance here in Montreal on your radio, on your computer, on your iPod, on your iPhone, on your MP3 player, on your iPad, on your I don't know. Exactly.
In your ear as well.
That's the best place. So, cockpit?
Cockpit. You guys saw it.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me all about... We had Wenwei here.
Yes.
It sounded fantastic. What did you think?
Well, it was very impressive. I'll say that. Mm-hmm. Very impressive. And I was actually re-listening to last week's interview to see what I could add to it. Something that Allison, one of the performers, mentioned was that Wenwei really encourages them to be free and wild, but always know exactly what they're doing and have that strong technique. And I thought that wasn't an understatement. That was or an overstatement, rather. She was right. Everyone was precise and perfect and beautiful and pushed performance-wise. And another thing that surprised me is because he mentioned that some of his male dancers have a background in breakdance. Well, it didn't surprise me in that I could kind of see that in the movement, which is why I asked the question. But sometimes when you're a break dancer going into contemporary dance, you can lack some of the other qualities of dance, but not these boys. I found they were really strong and well-rounded in technique.
I found that the four guys, I was definitely splitting them up into, this is the breakdancing guy, this is
really?
The other one, and this is, and that they each had their own strengths and so on. It was the blonde guy who was sort of a little bit chunkier than the other guys, who was the, as far as I could tell, the guy who had the breakdance abilities or the background, and I didn't find he mixed in so well. It was the tall guy I was most impressed with, of the guy dancers. Mm. It was the sort of thing, he just sort of, to me, smoked everybody left, right, and center in knowing how and what to do with his body.
Well, do you feel, though, that the choreography kind of let the dancers show their strengths more so? Like, I didn't feel like the unison sections left anybody behind.
That I agree. Although there, it's, to me, it was more the sort of thing where this was sort of like goofy childish fun. They're really, the whole piece itself didn't really have any sort of like, oh, it's serious, oh, this has meaning, oh, this, you have to go and sort of scratch your head and think about it. I'm not so certain I agree with them that it's all about sex and penises and stuff like that, but it's just, okay, so what can we do? We have these outrageous feathers. Where can we stick them on our bodies, and what can we make them do, and how do we make them do it?
Yeah, in that sense, I felt like it kind of got a little caught up in the props. Maybe somewhere along the way, it was just fun with images and feathers. Like there was a section in particular where one of the dancers had feathers on his knees, and he was dancing, and it was cool to look at. But I was like, I don't know where this falls into the thematic.
Well, he was twisting. It was one of the things where I was thinking about while I was doing it, is recognize that there was definite pop music illusions that I was seeing, and one thought that I had that I didn't do it all, because we're obviously talking about it now. I was going to come up and just sort of make a sort of mega, not a mega mix, a sort of nice tight mix of just going through each of those styles from the twist to, I should have brought my notes. Anyhow, but yeah, there's each one sort of very specific in sort of this chunk, but I did like the whole, sometimes it's just fun watching something happen just because it's cool to watch. There doesn't have to be necessarily is so meaningful. And even reliance on props just can be lots of fun. You happen to like the dresses and Ultra.
Yeah.
I like the feathers in cockpit.
Oh my God. And the feathers were incredible.
Yes.
I kept thinking it was some sort of like, I don't know, crazy new age plastic or some sort of machine. Like, I don't know. It just moved so incredibly gracefully. And they would whip their heads around like it was a durable feather. And
images. It might be made out of some sort of space age plastic.
Maybe.
Yes. space age birds.
But then again, I guess nature just does it better.
Yeah.
I liked also the way that they were quite inventive. And sort of, there's the time where they came out with them in their armpits. And then it was, I don't know, I'd love to have seen what the harness was that used it, because having it on their neck, on their head, on their waist, around their midriff, on the legs, whoever designed that knows their way about it. And yes, I screwed up by not having my notes with me, otherwise I would have had the names written down, which is, hold on. If you can talk, I can probably find it.
I have a question. So was it just really playful, or did it seem very structured narrative?
It was like little scenes, and some were playful, some were very playful, like making jokes on stage. I think the opening image, the four boys come out and they each have a we don't see them at first, so they're sitting in a circle and they're talking, you know, and it's like, oh, let's see yours, and he brings out this little glowing egg, you know, and it goes around the circle, and the last boy brings out his egg, and it's a little bit smaller than everybody else's egg, and so they start teasing him about it, and then they have this playful interaction, you know, trying to grab the eggs first and trying not to end up with a smaller egg, and with dialogue, and every once in a while they'd break into a scene like this where it was like obviously comical, and I found like with the lighting, what they would do is kind of show us the stage with the lights, and that's how you kind of knew that it was, we're getting out of this fantasy world and going into this kind of comical relief.
Right.
And then you would go back into this kind of, this wild creature atmosphere, or this, you know, battleground between two of the male dancers, and little just scenes like that.
And so basically scenes.
Yes, prearranged sort of things. Okay, you guys are coming in with two feathers attached to the small of your back. How do you want to do it? And they would go do it, or do you guys have these as sort of like penises and you're going to have to sword fight with them. And stuff like that. Okay. Yes, I do have it. The costumes were by Kate Burrows. And so we got to give her props. And then also, the other thing we haven't mentioned is Allison Denham, who was here. Because to me, it was, yes, the break dancer guy was fine. The tall guy was, to my mind, the best guy dancer. But she...
Ugh. She threw them all away.
Yes, exactly. It's they might as well have just given her all the feathers.
Was there only one female dancer then? Yeah. The rest was guys?
Yes.
She was definitely given this kind of goddess-like, powerful... Well, at least in some moments, most moments... And also, I feel like it was interesting how Wenwei. How he mentioned that it makes you a warlord when you have one of these feathers on. And sometimes people would have more than one feather, and it always seems to be the person with the most feathers is the most dominant on the stage at that time. And so when she would come out, you know, with three in each hand and one on her head, you know, and be carried around by all the boys, you know, it gave her this really kind of strong, mystical creature feel.
All right.
I thought it was just her movements that were just amazing and wonderful. Oh, yeah. And at which point, yes. Yes, she had lots of feathers, but the feathers didn't make her a great dancer.
No. But I'm agreeing with you that she was an incredible dancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, to me, this sort of thing, it's silly, goofy fun, which you need every now and again, especially given that, to my mind, sometimes the dance world does take itself just very, very seriously.
Also, Wenwei mentioned last week that some of the sections were structured improv, and that surprised me. Is that surprising to you?
No, it's in terms of bring up the breakdancing guy again. That, to me, would be a structured improv, and where he just definitely... made it obvious to me that he came from a breakdancing background, and that, okay, in order to keep everything sort of even, you have your solo here now for this long, at which point go keep it within the confines of this. But no, it did not surprise me at all. It's the sort of thing, like, also I can imagine, given that the feathers themselves sometimes probably don't always do what you want them to do, in terms of whether they swoop instead of sway, or they sway instead of swoop, at which point you obviously have to be aware of, if it's going that way when it's supposed to be going this way, then so what am I going to do, and how am I going to do it, how am I going to get it back to this place? So I don't think it was, no, it doesn't surprise me at all that it was structured improv as opposed to very rigorously choreographed.
Any more questions?
Was it as sensual, erotic as it was advertised? Because when I read about it, this is usually what the reviews say, you know, the erotic takes flight and that kind of thing. But the way you're describing it, you're looking more at, you know, the dance and the playfulness.
I think the theme, there was themes of eroticism that came through, but it didn't turn you on.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, it's the feathers as penises was definitely a very strong motif.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, however, bare-chested dancers and
mesh
bodysuit on the woman.
Yeah, I keep forgetting about that. Oops, sorry. I have to remember there are other people who do not share my sexuality. A sense of sexuality. But yeah, to me it's the sort of thing, I say, okay, fine, yeah, it's like a penis, but it's fine and dandy. It doesn't really do anything for me.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, it's to me it was a breath of fresh air, because it was very well done, and I sort of am now just going further and further and saying, yeah, I like the fact that it's not something that left me having to scratch my head and say, okay, so what is the theme? How did it all fit together? Mm-hmm. Why did it fit together? Did it fit together well? No, it was just lots and lots of fun.
Yeah, and I would say even there was kind of, in an abstract way, a cohesive theme. Like you as he's describing, you know, growing up in this environment with four boys and this kind of perspective on femininity, that was there, you know, in snippets and parts, and sometimes it wasn't, but sometimes it was, and I was satisfied with that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Missed a good show then, didn't I?
Yeah, very impressive show.
Yeah, but okay. You got to see the Killian evening.
Yeah,
I did. I'm not feeling sorry for you. At least not yet.
Okay.
And yeah, you saw Mary Schuinard talk.
Yeah, that was really fun. It was part of the Festival de la Littérature, and she had an interview at La Grande Bibliothèque the day before yesterday. At first, I thought she may talk about herself. In fact, the idea was that she was going to talk about the books that she likes. And it was set up just on a black stage, two large leather comfy chairs. She had all of her favorite books spread around herself and then talked about why she liked them. And it was really interesting because she's obviously an artist and she's looking for inspiration, but also for meaning, and she's interested by a lot of ancient text. For example, something I found impressive was that she likes to read Sanskrit. So she likes to read the Sanskrit translations. Of course, she doesn't actually read Sanskrit. But what she'll do is she'll buy four or five different translations to make sure that she really gets the sense of it, because everybody will have a different interpretation. And she also reads a lot of poetry. And that was very interesting for me, because what she likes is not just the straightforward poetry. She likes the really contemporary stuff that is just based on vowels. And from what I understand, she also incorporates this sometimes into her pieces, where she has her dancers go, you know, make guttural sounds and sort of explode into just, you know, consonants. And this is the kind of poetry she reads. So the interviewer was always trying to be very linear and say, so this is the book that inspired this kind of piece. And she would flip her long hair and goes, no, not at all, you know, and always be the contrary Mary and putting the interviewer back in this place. That was very amusing. And he was always trying to push her into talking about dance and what inspires her in her choreography. And she always wanted to talk about literature because that's what she was invited to do. But she did bring, there was a PowerPoint, so not really PowerPoint, but the little slideshow going on behind her. She had scanned in some pages of her favorite books. And we were lucky she also brought some drawings that she makes after she improvised the choreography. So the way she works is she doesn't sketch stuff out and then have people dance it. She will have people jam, and then she makes these drawings. And of course, this is radio, so you can't see this. But, you know, I'm a visual artist, and I was totally turned on, and I was whipping out my little notebook, and I was made. They're little ideograms, and they're brilliant drawings. What she does is she puts them onto white, small white card, just with a marker. She sketches them out. And then she has at home a clothesline with cloth pegs, and she hangs them one next to the other, sort of rearranges them. And this is how she builds her choreography. So that was very cool to find that out. And I can see then the connection. She looking at hieroglyphs and sort of ancient texts, and you could really tell, you know, it gave you an insight of how her mind works.
Now you're making me feel bad that I missed it.
Yeah, you see, it was snowing and Zeke didn't feel like going out and putting on winter boots, and I dragged my butt there, and I was very glad I did.
Cool. At which point, well, I'll make sure to see it the next time.
Okay, then. You know, it was televised. You can probably there was a big fat TV camera there. I'm very, very sure that's going to be broadcast at one point.
Okay.
So I'll let you know.
We keep an eye out for that.
Mm-hmm.
And then Allison, Elizabeth, you got a whole whack of stuff happening as far as fundraising goes.
Yeah. Well, I'll mention to you. Actually, this has nothing to do with fundraising, but it's coming up tonight. Okay. So I thought I'll mention this first. Mm-hmm. I have a friend of mine, Frances McKenzie, and she's doing an installation piece in a gallery by Metro Papineau, 2131 St. Catherine Street East. And that's tonight and tomorrow. And she's created this incredible forest and these incredible characters, these masks out of paper mache. And the reason I'm mentioning it is because I'm going to be one of the characters in the installation.
Hey.
Yeah. So it's all about kind of New Age myths. It's myths about stories that she's gathered kind of from her own life, from her, you know, small community out east, and this new culture of, you know, paved roads and drinking beer and just being a teenager and that kind of thing. So it's taken her, you know, growing up to look back and develop these ideas and create this kind of atmosphere. So it's going to be a nice event. You get to spend some time in the forest and interact with the characters and all that.
When is it again?
It's tonight and tomorrow. Doors open at 7:30. The show starts at 8:30.
And what's the address?
2131 St. Catherine Street East.
And how much does it cost?
$7.
Cheap at any price.
Mm-hmm. And there's a bar. So you can join the kind of ceremony of youth myth.
And is there any sort of stuff on the Duck Wife that's happening?
Yes, actually, we have an online fundraising campaign happening right now. If you go to kickstarter.com and look up The Duck Wife, you can find us there. We have a little video kind of explaining the project and some images up. And the great thing about Kickstarter is it's designed for artists. You go up there, you propose a project, and then you give little bid numbers. So like you can bid, you know, $50 or $5 or whatever you can afford, and we'll give you a gift. We'll give you a signed album, or we'll give you some of our merchandise or something like that as a thank you for the donation. And the other thing about it, though, is that we have to decide what our goal is going to be. And if by the June 3rd, which is our deadline, if we haven't reached our goal of $5,000, we don't get anything. Your credit cards are not charged.
Oh my God.
You don't get any prizes.
Okay. So where are you at right now?
Where are we at? Mm-hmm. I think we just launched it last week.
Okay.
We're at $500.
All right.
Okay. So, bid often, bid early, get lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm.
Lots please, of please, please get us all the way to Edmonton.
And so, yes, they're... happy International Dance Day, y'all. We're up running up against time. I'm going to quickly mention that there is this whole, yes, pas de danse, pas de vie, and it's International Dance Day in the rest of the world, but in Quebec it is International Dance Week. There is a whole scad, thousands upon hundreds of things to do, one of them which is today at 5:30. You can go in front of, down to, which mall? Philip Square. That's Philip Square?
Yeah.
Okay. And yeah, they're doing a choreographed dance by Jose Navas, which is going to be interpreted by Hanako Hoshimi Keynes. There's another one happening on Friday. There are lots of free courses all over the place. And there's a real fancy purple glossy folder poster stuff that you can get all sorts of information. I think next year we'll explain the background behind International Dance Day and whose birthdays and everything like that.
Sounds good.
Thank you both very much for helping me, making me look better than I really have any right to be. This has been Movement Museum. My name's Zeke, here with Alice and Elizabeth and Bettina. It's 3:01. Primetime is in the house someplace and letting us go overtime. Thank you very much, Primetime. We will speak to you next week. Same dance time, same dance channel. Do you